Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody. We're coming at you sort of live, watching the last 12 minutes of Tech versus OU right now, and it's not looking great. It's not looking great, guys.
Dude, McCullough just went up 4-on-1 in the lane and got
slightly clobbered. Or stuffed at the rim.
Stuffed. Like, and Beard's like screaming. I was like, dude, it's 4-on-1.
Go up strong.
Or find somebody that's open.
4-to-1, though. That's
not,
it.
That's not what he means.
That's what he's saying. He's saying 4-to-1. He's like, coach, I got this. I know what you're saying. But yeah, Tech's currently down 42-31. And I'm sure we'll be updating this as we go.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to have a really... hard time staying focused, moving through our content quickly.
We'll be fine. We got it. We got this. We're professionals.
Especially when you miss shot after shot after shot. Bunnies.
Bunnies.
As they say.
Yeah. Don't want to miss bunnies.
You can find us on the Twitter, the show, at 23personnel. You can follow me at PuntsSuck. Getting more involved in the baseball action as it's coming up. And Michael at Michael_LBK. You can also find us on Instagram at 23 Personnel Podcast. And then the t-shirt store, teespring.com/store/23personnel podcast.
Yeah, you've got some hoodies up there, some
be good
men's and women's t-shirts.
Good day to wear a hoodie today. This is one of the days I hate living in Lubbock, by the way.
Well,
there's not very many, but today's one of them.
That blue norther flew in this afternoon, and the wind chill was...
It's not even like the cold 30s. Front and that it's cold. It's that it's like 70-mile-per-hour winds at 9:25 p.m.
With dirt in the air in February. It's just beautiful. Just get ready for several more days like this until at least
May.
May.
It's like one of those things where you open the door and it like flies out of your hand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You wake up in the morning, you've got piles of dust around your windows and your doors.
I hope she doesn't mind me saying this. My wife was out in that wind so much today, she felt like she needed to wash her hair when she got home just so she could brush it or something. It just was just all over the place.
It sucks. You know what else sucks?
Yes, I do. But go ahead.
The university, Texas Tech, took 15 days to finally, air quotes, respond to Duffy's Title IX allegations. And it's not really a response.
No. It's not a response to
that. That's a charge.
It's just a response to an email that was released. That
So it's more of an open records request than even Texas Tech coming out making a statement.
Yeah, Sarah Self-Walbrick, who's been on top of this at the AJ,
and who we think has helped the Central Michigan paper do
totally.
Who knows?
Totally speculation on our point, but
for sure
that Michigan paper sure did have a lot of info very quickly, especially for. Probably like a 20-year-old journalism student.
And then her article was released right after that.
Yeah. But Sarah does great work. And I, you know, what she did was she just reported, hey, here's the email that Kimberly Simone, I believe. I'm unsure if I can read if there's a, yeah, it is. There's a, whatever that little accent mark is on an O. I'm sorry, guys, but it is Simone. So she wrote an email to Marcy Tyler and saying that she wanted to schedule a meeting with Kirby and Coach Wells to discuss some concerns we are seeing. And this was sent on April 10th, which was right about a month after the Title IX allegations were filed, or maybe not a month, but it was a few weeks at least. And then, so the AJ posted this story, and basically all Tech did was respond to what that email meant. And they said that the meeting in April was focused on a desire to enhance Title IX training for all of our student athletes, which was accomplished in the months that followed. In order to protect all of our students, all Title IX investigations remain wholly independent of university departments and offices, including the athletic department. Thus, no specific investigatory?
Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of you.
Matters were discussed in the at-issue meeting. So,
like a month after this comes up, the Title IX office is like, hey, let's meet with the football coach and the athletic director.
About some concerns.
Concerns and Title IX training. A desire to enhance Title IX training.
Yeah, so it's interesting that this was the only thing
that
Tech
veiled.
Bothered to respond to during all of this stuff that's come up in the last month.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like this was a Friday night news dump.
It was. That's right. It was about 8 p.m. when that came out. Yes, exactly right.
A little over 2 weeks for them to come out and say something about it.
But they didn't even say anything about this case specifically.
No, and they said, the meeting that you saw requested from Title IX with the football coach was not about anything specific. No. It only comes a couple weeks after one of the student athletes.
Yeah, we need to speak
suspected, alleged to be date raping women.
Yeah.
A woman.
Yeah, we need to speak to the AD and the head football coach
just to
discuss a few things.
Sure.
Just a few things.
Sure.
Yeah, Beard wasn't invited, Tadlock wasn't invited, Kitley wasn't invited. It's just strictly they're just trying to hit a couple people at once. Not to take up too many people's time, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing that came out of this is that I don't know if you mentioned it in the first quote that a Title IX officer cannot notify any other department, i.e. the athletic department, that a complaint has been filed.
True. So that gives, like we discussed before, that kind of gives Tech the plausible deniability that anyone within the football building or even Hokut himself knew about any of this going on because of how Title IX runs investigations and how they do not notify anyone else, allegedly, supposedly, about any said investigations. And it makes sense to an extent, but then it also, I'm not sure if it makes a ton of sense. I don't know the background of Title IX employees and their investigation.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Obligatory abilities. and if they, what kind of training they endure to investigate sexual assault, you know, who knows? So there's a lot of gray area there too. That's just kind of up for debate, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what we thought. Tech has enough ammo on their side that, oh yeah, we didn't know. We didn't know anything about it. Title IX doesn't ever, they don't talk to us, which sounds like that's possibly true, but still sounds shady as hell. I don't know. We can talk about something else if you want.
This goes back in my mind, you know, outside of that, that like, okay, maybe they didn't, like, they really didn't know, or they shouldn't have known about the Title IX, but they should have known about the police report.
That's what it always comes back to with me. And there, that was in May. That was a lot
and
later.
I mean, obviously, you get a notification of a police report long before they you know, come back with any findings or anything.
I mean, I guess the argument there is no charges were actually filed. And no arrests were made, or he wasn't brought in for questioning, well, that I know of, anything like that. And just his mention of a name on there, but it's still, it goes back to...
If you go back on the timeline and look at the Texas Tech Athletic Department side of this, and say the very first thing they heard about it was the Title IX office saying, we want to, Coach Wells, we want to talk to you specifically, and Kirby Hocutt, about enhancing Title IX training for student athletes. A couple weeks later, you get a police report alleging one of your players has raped a woman. Hell, that's an easy connection to make. Like, you don't have to have Title IX say, we're investigating Jet Duffy. He raped somebody.
Yeah, you don't have to have...
But when Title IX comes to you and says, hey, we want to train your athletes about this, and then you get a police report saying one of your athletes raped somebody, one and one makes two, right?
You would think. But who's to say, you know, they probably never saw that, police report. There's no way that ever got back to anyone at Texas Tech. There's just zero chance, no possibility.
No, because of course, athletic department wouldn't have any kind of feelers out there for police activity.
No one in the police department follows the Red Raiders and or would say anything to anyone about one of the quarterbacks being accused of such an awful thing.
Of course not.
No, of course not.
No.
Let's talk about better things.
Let's talk about baseball.
Left field, well struck. Nesloni picks it up on a bounce. He's racing for second, throw! Out in second! Young lifts it to right field, looking for a second home run, and he's got it into his own bullpen.
Reps and some time because all the tools are there.
Wow, this one launched deep left off the bat of Warren and into the bleachers. There he goes, and the pitch is driven high and deep to right. Kerstad to the wall, off the top of the fence. Here comes the big foul. Cameron Warren's going to motor home from first. Throw to third is late.
All right, Michael, there were some baseball games played between our last recording and today, right now.
Against some pretty good competition.
Yeah.
Better than just pretty good.
Better than Houston Baptist and Northern Colorado.
Yeah, you know, not throwing shade to those programs.
I'll throw it.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and throw some shade.
Combined 30 wins last year. Texas Tech will hit 30 wins before May.
You heard it here first, folks.
Folks.
Hashtag folks.
So they played in the Round Rock Classic down in Round Rock, Texas, obviously.
Makes sense.
Sorry, I was getting that confused with, I keep thinking that Dell Diamond is in the name somewhere, which is the field they played at in Round Rock, but no. Round Rock Classic, played at Dell Diamond, but Texas Tech was part of four teams in that field. Other three were Tennessee, Stanford, and Houston. Stanford was pretty highly ranked, I think top 15 going into that game, but at the time, I think Stanford was like 1-5, 1-4.
They were 1-4, I think. Yeah, 1 or 4 or 5. Yeah.
If I had my book here, I could tell you.
I know.
I've been updating it.
I want to see this book, the scorekeeping book.
Today's book was really interesting because the Southern scorekeeping page was fairly sparse.
Yep.
There was a lot
till
of
the ninth.
There was a lot of ink on the Texas Tech side because of like the first three innings, you scored 12 runs. And there was time when you batted around, so it took up an extra column. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I'm going back and I'm refilling it because I didn't keep the scorebook live until today. But I'm going back and refilling previous games based off of, anyways, because I want to have it.
Yeah,
all.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Friday night you played Tennessee, probably the best team you've played so far. Even throughout the weekend, you got their best starter Friday night. You offensively.
Well, their best available starter.
Okay.
Right? Because wouldn't Crochet, isn't he out? He didn't pitch because he had arm soreness?
Maybe.
Something like that?
You have to listen to Keith Patrick.
I did. That's why I think that. By the way, guys, if I say anything at all that is slightly helpful to this baseball conversation, it's because I listened to Dinger Derby yesterday while at work and took a few notes.
And you should too, everybody.
You should listen to Dinger Derby. We'll make sure you we'll get all his Twitters and everything at the end of this. But
he's probably like cringing when he listens to us talk baseball.
Especially me. Sorry, Keith.
That was disgusting.
But yeah, so, Garrett Crochet, Keith said he was one of their, he's like a top 10 draft pick pitcher, but he didn't pitch against Tennessee.
Okay, so
Tech.
They were expecting him to play, but
yes, okay. They thought he might, but he had some arm soreness.
Either way, Tech did not get to a very good start. You gave up 3 runs in the bottom of the first inning. So you were behind 3-0 real early.
Weren't there some errors involved in that too?
I'm sure there were to get that many runs.
Yeah.
I mean, 3's not a lot, but it's enough where you're like, what happened?
Yeah.
Again, I don't have my scorebook in front of me. I can tell you.
No, you could.
I do know that Tech scored 1 run in the 3rd and 4th innings. And Tennessee had also scored a run to get back to within 2 runs. It was 4-2. And then Tennessee scored another couple of runs in the 6th and 7th to get it to 6-2. And that's all it went. That's how it went.
Yeah. Fulford was the only guy that had more than one hit for Tech.
Braxton.
Yeah. He was the only one getting anything done at all in that. This is cold. This team doesn't like playing in the cold. They were a little rusty, knocking the rust off in the opening day on a game that Tadlock would probably normally, well, you know, maybe we just won't play that one. But this was, I don't think anyone's ready to jump off the bandwagon or anything. Tennessee's a pretty solid team. And
no, because you came back on Saturday and you whipped a top 15 team, 7-2.
That's right.
And Stanford. Bryce Bond and Micah Dallas combined for 15 strikeouts in this game. Only gave up 6 hits, 1 walk. Bonin notched a career high 9 strikeouts.
Oh my gosh.
Micah Dallas has 11 strikeouts through the 7 innings he's pitched this season. So he's getting up to, what's that, like 1.5 strikeout per inning? Which is pretty good. Tech flipped the script from Friday night to Saturday. They scored the 1st, 2nd, and 4th innings. And then dropped 3 more in the 7th to push it to 7. And then Sunday was the real exciting game against Houston. Brian Klein had a walk-off single in the 10th. Now, the amazing thing about this Brian Klein, he was 0-for-12 on the weekend going into this 10th inning at bat. 0-for-12.
I listened to enough of the game where Gus kept trying to do like a reverse jinx on the radio to get him out of his slump. And I know the first time he tried it, I think he was 0-for-8, which would have been coming up to the plate.
Like
his first at bat, maybe, of the day.
Game, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was 0-for-4 in both Tennessee and Stanford. and then went 0 for 4 to start the Houston game.
Yeah.
But then comes through in the 10th with a single. His one hit. It was 1 for 13 on the weekend. How we got there, though.
I know. This is really interesting. Go ahead.
In the 10th. So Drew Baker leads off, and he singles. Jace Young fouls out. Stillwell strikes out. So you've got a runner on first. Your go-ahead runner on first in the 10th, but you're down to two outs already. Mm-hmm. Baker then steals second. Houston decides to intentionally walk Braxton Fulford to get the force out back on.
The only consistent guy in the weekend, basically, at the plate. And because they knew Klein was coming.
And then it gets the force out. It takes Fulford's bat out of it and says, okay, we're going to go after the guy that's 0 for 12, then the consistent bat.
I wonder if that was just like a mental, if BK thought, okay, all right.
Watch this.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to intentionally walk Fulford just so you can get the quote unquote easy out. All right. Okay.
And then he slaps a single through, past the second baseman. Drew Baker goes screaming around. There's a shot or one of the highlight videos from the third baseline. It shows J-Bob just like swinging his arms, sending Baker. The throw to the plate was a little bit late. Baker scored easily, I think, but there was a play there. And then everybody mobs Brian Klein out there in a shallow right field.
Yeah, I think there was a little drama with Noisy on the first baseline.
Yeah, so it was Noisy
a few innings earlier.
No, it was Baker and Bonin. Bonin first kind of waved as he was running past back towards the Houston dugout, and I think it was Baker.
Well, I'm not sure
because
Baker was on base every at bat, so that's possible.
Yeah. But he's like they were making very large motions back to the
large motions.
I don't know how to say that. They're like exaggerated gestures. Right, just watch the video.
I don't know why that cracked me up.
You know what I'm talking about. Defensively, Austin Becker started on the mound. 4 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 2 Ks, 3 walks. Out of anybody, he gave up the most walks. This is back in the Houston game. And then you had Dobbins pitched an inning. Brustowski pitched 2 innings. And in his 2 innings, he struck out 4. So 4 of the 6 batters. Four of the 6 outs, he struck out. He did give up 0 hits, so he only faced 6. Sublette threw for 2 innings, had 5 strikeouts. So out of his 6 outs, 5 of them were strikeouts. And then Andrew Devine comes down in the 10th and records 2 more strikeouts. So you
hot
had
bullpen.
Yeah. You had, what is that? 11 strikeouts, 12 strikeouts from the bullpen alone in that game. The other thing to note, obviously, you go through 4 relievers on Sunday. No pitcher appeared twice on the weekend. So depth and your bullpen was a big contributing factor that you didn't have to rely on rolling somebody back out there after Friday, because Houston did. Houston was reusing pitchers on Sunday that pitched on Friday.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. On the weekend, the bullpen.
Yeah, these are great.
So this is not my stat. This is Keith's stat.
Yes.
The bullpen went, that they threw 14 innings, only gave up 8 hits, 2 runs, but this strikeout to walk ratio is better than 7-1. 22 strikeouts to 3 walks.
And he was saying, Keith also mentioned that the relief pitchers coming in against Houston, I think every one of them was hitting 94 plus. They were throwing it. And I couldn't.
They were throwing cheddar.
They were.
Throwing ched.
Throwing ched. But it was, it kind of just makes you smile to think about the pitching that this team has available to them. And because that's just so crucial and it's so huge. And to go through 2 weeks, 7 games. I mean, a 4-game series and a 3-game series where you didn't reuse a pitcher in either of those series. Mm-hmm. And they pitched that well, too. I don't know. I'm pretty impressed with that. I think that's kind of the story so far of the year.
And you see some of the guys with these shorter outings too, like Dobbins and Devine, like where they only throw one inning.
You're right.
Like, well, but they gave up one hit or no hits, or the first weekend when Brustowski only was in there for 2/3 of an inning. Well, his 2/3 were 8 pitches and 2 strikeouts.
I think McMillan came in and gets one batter, right?
McMillan comes in and gets 1/3 of an inning on one pitch. And then he's replaced. So the guys that are going on, you know, very few innings pitched, they're not being pulled because they've given up a whole bunch.
No, very few pitches pitched, too, because mm-hmm. they did their job and that was it.
Yep. And then today, Raiders play this afternoon versus the Southern University of Baton Rouge, the Jaguars. They won 13-2.
Yeah, and it was 13-0 till the ninth, right?
Yeah, the Red Raiders put up 12 runs in the first three innings. They scored 3 in the first, second, and then 6 in the third. But okay, so I noted this on our Slack chat, and like immediately came true, and I was like, yes. So the Southern starting pitcher, his fastball was only getting up into the mid-80s, and this was not like their Friday night. It was not their best guy, which there was some talk about saying, oh, you may get like their best shot. You know, they may pitch a little backwards to get, you know, a really good shot at Tech. This can't be their best guy, only hitting mid-80s on his fastball, and the wind was blowing out. Like, it was the guys that were there. So Mike Gustafson on the call today said it was very reminiscent of the Super Regional game 3 against Oklahoma State, mm-hmm. where it's like, it's just a strange wind that doesn't, like, it doesn't really blow this way normally, but it's blowing straight out. And it was, so I said, okay, the starting pitcher is throwing up mid 80s fastballs,
meatballs,
wind's blowing out. I said, prepare yourselves for bombs, hit send. Turn my attention back to the game. Nate Romblast hits another 3-run home run.
Oh my God.
And he clears the center field monster. So it's 402 feet at that depth from home plate. And the wall is probably 18 feet high.
Yeah.
The ball goes over that wall.
Well, and you called it. You totally saw this happening.
Seconds before.
Witness. I was there. I saw it happen too, or I heard it happen.
Yeah, you read it. On the flip side of that, though, Rombach, he starts the game off with that 3-run home run and then proceeds to go 0-for-4 the rest of the game.
Well, you know.
With like 3 strikeouts.
That's fine. he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's fine. He's I think Keith pointed out this afternoon, sits solely in second place for number of home runs hit in the country, behind the guy from New Mexico State, which I'm sure they just play in a really, really competitive league.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Mason Montgomery got the start today, who is not a midweek starter talent. Like, if you're rolling a guy out like Mason Montgomery on a Tuesday, goes to show you the depth that you have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He goes a full 5 innings. I think he went 5 innings to be eligible for the win. Because it was 13-0, and there was no need for him to be in there. His pitch count was really low. I think he came out of the fifth or sixth inning. He came out of the fifth inning with like 60 pitches or 65 pitches. It was really low. Only gave up 3 hits, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. The only trouble he got in was in the fourth inning. He gave up a double. It was pretty well hit into the left field corner. And it was interesting because all the outfielders were kind of shaded around to the right field because mm-hmm. the way the wind was blowing. So both left fielders were playing a little further shaded towards center field than they were straight up left. So anything that went into left field, they had a long way to go to. The ball gets hit into the left field corner. Who was out there today? Otremba's out there, and he's like booking it into the corner to get the throw back. Stops him at second. The next batter up, like, smokes a single almost in the, not into the corner, but more into left field back towards Otremba. The runner from second is rounding third going home. Otremba guns him out at the plate.
Woo.
Like, into the wind, throws him out of the plate. And on the broadcast, it looked like the ball was coming in, like, too slowly, It's like, oh, he's not going to make it. Like the ball's not going to beat the runner. The view was obstructed enough because the play went to review. The initial call in the field was that he was out. I think there wasn't a good enough view to overturn it because I wasn't very confident that Braxton Fulford had made the tag.
Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't tell in the review what touched first, the glove on the runner or the runner's hand on the plate. He gets called out. And I think the very next pitch, the runner that's on first that hit the ball that sent the guy from second to home. You hear me? This really confused look. Okay, so
okay. Say, start over.
So there's the batter that they hit the double,
yes.
Who then got thrown out at home.
Yes.
The batter behind the guy that hit the double hit the single that sent the guy home. Okay, so that guy's on first.
Got it.
He probably should have been at second, but he's on first. I think the very next pitch, he gets caught stealing because there's like a wild pitch or something and it hits the backstop. But the backstop at Denlaw Field is padded and the ball like rebounds right back to Fulford. And he pops up, not even like there was a wild pitch, and throws him out at second. And he was out by a mile.
Fulford's had, that's good to hear because he's had some trouble getting it to second to gun down a stolen base guy. So wait a minute. So even with the wild pitch and all that, he was still thrown out by a mile.
Was
this guy like as fast as me?
I don't know. So the trouble that Montgomery got himself in, he gave up a really big double that could have sparked some momentum offensively, followed up by a single. But the guy that hit the double is thrown out at the plate.
Yep.
The guy that hit the single is thrown out trying to steal second and ends the inning.
And like you said, I'm not sure why he wasn't at second in the first place.
He probably should have been.
He should have gone. I mean, I guess his thought was that Otremba could have made the play at second instead of to home. But once he saw that ball flying through the air to go home, he could have.
Yeah.
I don't know. He may not be very fast.
If he got thrown out trying to steal second off of a wild pitch.
Maybe he's like, oh, I don't know if I can make that. But I could steal.
Yep.
Ugh.
Connor Queen came in relief of Mason Montgomery. This is his first appearance on the year. He went two full innings, gave up only one hit, no runs, no walks, no strikeouts. He only threw 13 pitches in two full innings of work. 9 of those were strikes. So again, like
solid day.
Like guys aren't going like extended appearances, but not because they're struggling. Queen threw 2 innings on 13 pitches. That's nuts.
It's an efficient group of pitchers.
Mr. Efficiency. And then Brandon Hendricks comes in. I say close out. This was not a close out opportunity or a save. He throws the last 2 innings, gives up 2 hits, gives up 2 runs. There's a single and then a 2-run home run, which blows the shutout in the 9th inning. Like, that's okay. 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. So in his 2 innings, he struck out half the guys he faced. You get one more game against Southern tomorrow at 1. I'm actually going to this game.
I saw that.
My boss gave me her ticket. Which is interesting when like your boss gives you a ticket to a baseball game that's a day game.
It's a free pass.
Like, I guess I'm taking a half day tomorrow.
Just don't go to work, yeah.
Following last weekend's games, this is a little out of order, but following last weekend's games, the rankings were updated. Texas Tech maintains their consensus top 5 ranking. Or however you want to say that, Baseball America has you as the highest of any of the ranking at number 2. So you're no longer at number 1. National College Baseball Writers Association has you at 3. USA Today has you at 3. College Baseball Nation has you at 3. Perfect Game at 4. And D1 Baseball at 5. So
top 5 at worst.
Yeah, the lowest ranking you have is a 5.
Yeah.
All right, the basketball game just ended, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Oklahoma wins 65-51.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, you probably already know that. But
of course you did.
Not great.
And then the upcoming games besides Wednesday versus Southern, you're going to Tallahassee Tallahassee, Florida. Take on Florida Atlantic Friday afternoon. Catch that on the Texas Tech Sports Network. And then you have two games against Florida State, a team you eliminated in Omaha, Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon. Both of those games are on the ACC Network Extra and probably Texas Tech Sports Network Radio Call.
Yeah.
So it may be on an ESPN streaming platform, because I saw there was a basketball game. It may have been the Duke-Wake Forest game that was on the ACC Network. But anyways, if you want more in-depth baseball coverage than any of this, you definitely need to check out Keith Patrick and the Dinger Derby podcast on Twitter, @Dinger_Derby, or Keith himself at Keith B. Patrick. And jump on the Instagram at @TTU_DingerDerby.
Yeah, he had an episode that came out Monday recapping the Round Rock tournament and previewing Southern a little bit. And I think he's going to have another episode previewing the games in Tallahassee this weekend.
Yeah, when doubt it. It looks like his recording and release schedule, like I think he jumps on and records Sundays after the series is wrapped up to release Monday morning.
Yeah.
So you can get a Dinger Derby podcast episode in your feeds Monday mornings. And then occasionally, probably throughout the midweek, to get you ready for the weekend series. Last thing on baseball, Little League update. I got to give you a Little League update.
I wanted to know, how did practice go on this lovely day? Because y'all have practice on Tuesdays, right?
Practice today was canceled.
Oh, no.
Because we have...
Because it was awful outside.
Because of the weather. I was trying to push through, but the hourly forecast changed enough throughout the day that it was going to get, the temperature was going to drop below our threshold before we could have gotten any practice in, really. So our, I don't know if it's the temperature or the, what do they call that? The wind chill, but that temperature threshold is 40 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the day it was like hovering in like 45. I was like, if it stays at 45 right after work, we're going to be fine. We'll get a,
the sun was out.
We'll get a short practice in because nobody wants to be in this wind. And then I checked the hourly and it had dropped to 43. I was like, oh no, it's getting close. And then a parent said, hey, you know, I don't really feel comfortable. It's like, it'd be 41 degrees at 5 o'clock. It feels like 30. I'm not going to go. And I rechecked mine. I was like, yeah, it's supposed to hit actual air temp 40 by 6 PM. And if we start practice at 5:30, like we may get 30 minutes in before it gets too cold. I was like, hey, you know what? Let's not practice tonight. But anyways, last week, because we had a little more forethought, we actually practiced inside on Thursday night. And actually came away really impressed with some of our batters, our hitters, especially Grayson. I was like, dude, you are crushing this. And then we have this little dude. One of the smallest guys on the team, like, has glasses, does not look athletic at all. Probably our best all around player. I was like, dude, you're going to surprise some people. And I can't wait.
That's great.
But like, he's small. He throws well. He catches well. He hits well. He runs fast. He gets it. I was like, dude, you're physically mature for your age, except for your height. I'm excited.
That's really cool.
Then there were a couple of players that looked like they had never picked up a baseball bat in their life. And I was like, oh my dear. Like, hitting off a tee is going to be a struggle. Like, there's one player that when they would swing, they would basically bring the bat to the ball and then just push it off the tee. I was like, no, no, no. You have to swing. You have to hit the ball and be like, push.
I can't even, I know exactly.
It's like a scoop. Like they were scooping it off the tee with the bat.
Like lacrossing it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's a very deliberate motion to bring the bat from their shoulder to the tee and then they'd stop the bat and then push the ball off the tee. I was like, all right, we got to work on this. And I'm out of time. Next. Who's next? Because I was working on batting with the players one-on-one while they were doing other drills. And some of them, like Grayson and this other kid that I mentioned that was really good, flew through their time with me. Like I only had a certain number of balls I let them hit. There was no like,
okay, these guys got it.
Let's try that again. Then I was like, okay, you guys are fine.
Y'all are good.
And there was one kid that was so like distracted. Like he chased the ball down. I was like, dude, you're hitting it into a net. Like just let it go. And then he like run it back and bring it to me. And then it's standing like on the wrong side of the tee. I was like, dude, you were just on the other side of the tee. What? Do you not remember where you just were? It's tee ball, really. Let's be honest. So I came away both impressed and concerned.
That seems to be the pattern and, of probably just being a coach of anything.
And Grayson asked me tonight, actually, he's like, Dad, when are we going to practice playing a game? I was like, bud, we got to get so much better before we can actually scrimmage, which is what he was asking about. Like he wants to get out there and have players hit a baseball into the field and run and like all that kind of stuff. I was like, we're not ready for that.
No. Come on, Dad. Just set it up.
Well, because
we'll be fine.
We've tried teaching like fundamentals by doing kickball. And it's,
oh, that's right.
It's not working. It's like, this is supposed to be fun and easy, and you're supposed to have already learned this. Like, when did I learn kickball? Obviously older than the kindergartner.
Yeah, me too.
So I was like, this is not working.
Yeah.
I was so excited about that kickball idea.
I thought it's a good idea, but it's just kind of complicates things a little bit. Or it could, if you don't really understand the rules anyway. But it seems like an easy way to explain them.
It's low risk. Like there's low threat. You're not gonna get hit with a baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot easier to kick a kickball than hit a baseball.
It's easier to corral a kickball, you know.
Oh, but nobody could field a kickball. And I was like, oh,
theoretically, it's easier.
This is not that hard. Anyways. All right. With that and with the basketball game just ending, let's go ahead and jump into basketball.
Here comes Stevenson. Spins.
Pass over the top, McCormick and a crowd stripped by Owens. Moretti on the run, bounce pass, here's Culver!
Evans.
Yes! Game over!
Mooney with a crossover and the lob to Owens!
Now the shot clock is at 3, Mooney spins, fires, oh! He caught it to go! Edwards with a 3, good! What a shot, Kyler Edwards! Moretti doubled into Tariq Owens, who puts it down! Already, Odiasi, throw bars it in. Shot clock down to 5. Got the screen. Here's a 3. Good.
Culver got the separation. Oh, big shot. Woo! Step it up big time. Dagger.
Culver with the dish.
Odiasi and 1. He can tie it at the line.
That's it. There's a new member of the Final Four Club, and they hail from Lubbock, Texas.
So I know we talked about this before, and you may have pointed it out, but listening to those highlights reminds me of how many alley-oops and lobs and dunks we had and how we just don't.
That was during the tournament, even.
Yeah, this was against, like, your best competition.
This wasn't against UTEP or somebody. This was,
yeah, I, like,
this
so
was highlight reel the, tournament time.
The highlights from that clip, like, the first one is that Zaire Smith 360 alley-oop against Stephen F. Austin. That is the lowest level of competition of highlights in that. Everything else is either against Kansas when you get that Culver dunk early on in that reel. And then there's Keenan Evans versus Texas at home.
Well, that wasn't a alley-oop dunk, though.
No. But the other ones, like it's Michigan, it's Gonzaga, it's Michigan State.
Yeah. If Harlan's saying it, then it was pretty deep into the tournament.
And I'm just like, we've got guys with size, but well, the offense is not just not in, like, it's not
one of them's ineligible to play, and one of them has a hurt foot too.
But like Holyfield has size, but he's not a dunker.
No, he's like, not someone who seems to be. He doesn't play above the rim very much. I mean, and that's not a knock or anything. This just doesn't seem to be his game.
McCullough is no shorter than Culver was. Like, they were both listed at 6'6".
Yeah.
But Culver was, his game was up around the rim a lot.
I mean, you're two.
McCullough's like not.
Probably your two best dunkers on the team are Shannon and Ramsey.
And Shannon's only seems to come out from like a steal. And
oh gosh, and then look out.
And then it's like, great. Ramsey, like, it doesn't seem to happen very often. Like I said, the offensive scoring
is different.
Way different.
Way different this year than the last two or three. Yeah.
Speaking about that though, really quickly, Beard, like, it has, you know, okay, so everybody talks about the defense and, you know, Mark Adams and the donut defense, I think you termed it. But the motion offense that Beard likes to run has produced this season 4 of the top 8 most efficient field goal shooters in the conference. No other team has 2 in there. You have 4. And it's Holyfield at number 2, Moretti at number 4, Edwards at number 6, and Ramsey at number 8. So.
Well, it's unfortunate that you bring that up. Yes, because tonight was like the most inefficient shooting that Tech has probably had in a while.
I mean, and I guess it's like regression to the mean, especially considering Saturday night when you shot like 90% from the field, it felt like you couldn't miss. Like when you beat a Big 12 road team, sorry, a Big 12 team on the road by 30 points.
Yeah.
Like things were going well for you. But before we get there, let's go back and talk about Kansas State from last Wednesday. You have a 7-point victory. It was close throughout most of the game because Kansas State does a really good job on the defensive side of the ball to slow things down. They're really good at just disrupting offensive flow. The thing that I think most people will remember from this game is Cartier Jara. There was a sequence there where he steals the ball. There was a pass that went to Moretti, but like he wasn't ready for it or something. It went over his head. He bobbled it. Jara picked it up, ran out, and had a TJ Shannon-esque dunk opportunity. And he went for it. I guess his move is a big windmill dunk.
Yeah.
He was a little too strong and clanked it hard off the back rim. Ball fires back out. Tech collects the rebound, runs back downfield, finds Moretti again. So Jara is back, trying to come back on defense to cover Moretti. Moretti hits an open 3.
Weber calls timeout.
Weber calls a timeout.
It's beautiful. It's a classic timeless sequence of, yeah, maybe don't do that. I saw on Twitter.
Well, here's the thing. Like, what else would you do? Like in Jara's position, like you're open.
Just dunk it.
Right. This is what you do. Like you have an open lane to the, like you take a dunk.
Maybe you don't windmill it.
I mean, like, here's the thing. Like if that's his move, that like, I kind of understand that.
Yeah. Cause we did see Zach Smith. I remember 2 windmills and they were just brutal. They were like,
this would have been like a big momentum swing for them.
He had barely crossed the free throw line and took off and just windmilled it home. I forgot it. One of them was against some poor non-con that he just defaced, and I can't remember who it was against someone else. But
Shannon had one like that too, where he leapt from like maybe a step inside the free throw line
on one of those steals.
Yeah, and like there's a picture of it where you're like,
there's no way he made that.
But no, he dunks that. But yeah, Jara goes for this windmill dunk, misses, and then Moretti drains a 3. Who is Jara's defensive responsibility? Bruce Weber calls a timeout.
Yeah, and like you said, at that point, was the game was within 5 or...
Yeah, that was a 5-point swing, but like the lead never got more than, I think 11 or 12 may have been the largest lead.
Yes.
But it definitely didn't end that way.
It was close the whole game.
And then the other thing with Cartier, there was a very public interaction between Bruce Weber and Jara. And the broadcast, I think, were saying that Weber was getting on to Jara about his shot selection. But Jara was like mouthing off and like yelling back at Weber, potentially cursed at him. Weber doesn't like get frustrated at Jara, but he picks up a stool and throws it down on the court.
Oh, I didn't
like,
see.
Like spikes a stool into the court.
Yeah, I saw that you mentioned that he got reprimanded, and was that why?
No, what he got reprimanded for, so the Big 12 announced Monday a public reprimand for Kansas State head coach Bruce Weber because he made a comment about officiating in the post-game press conference.
Oh.
And what he said, I think most people would agree with. He said, we need to figure out what a charge and a block is.
That's kind of fair.
I was like, okay.
As a fan of a team who loves to take a charge.
And I would assume that there's a player on our team that has a flair for the dramatic that a lot of people probably don't like.
Yeah.
Like anytime
might be Italian.
Anytime that Italian gets bumped, his head's thrown back.
Oh man.
And I mean,
it's like a car wreck. Poor kid. I feel for him every time. I mean, I don't know how he's not in a neck brace.
He probably wears a neck brace between the games.
He's got to. Cortisone shot.
And I'm sure fans of other teams absolutely hate to see it.
Oh, yeah.
But
you hate to see it.
Part of what Chris Beard coaches is to take charges. And it's one of those things in basketball, like as an observer, as someone that hasn't been trained as a referee, which I would assume a lot of us haven't been, what is a charge? What is a block?
What is a catch?
It's very muddy, right?
Yes.
But you get a coach that probably knows it as well as or better than a lot of us, makes a statement, says we need to figure out what a block and a charge is. After playing a team that is notorious for trying to get it's trying on the defensive side to take charges.
Yeah, it's very much part of Texas Tech's game plan. And I struggle watching it because there's some times where it's just like, guys, get off the floor. Play defense. Don't just fall down. But it's part of the game, and it's part of their strategy, and it's paid off a lot more than it hasn't. But I think it's a valid point to make because there are times that I've seen our guys that they are just completely shuffling their feet over and somehow they get that call.
Well, there's one.
They're like diving in front of people and sometimes they'll get that call, but not always.
Well, see, and then you and I disagreed on that because there's a call tonight wherein it looked like to me Nadolny was racing into the lane to get in front of somebody and then got trucked and OU player was called for a charge.
Yeah. Well, I looked up and it happened. It looked like he was like, I missed that part. I missed the part of him racing in there. But then on the replay, he so clearly like dove outside of the circle and jump stopped right in front of somebody. And yeah, got the call.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's tricky. You know, I'm surprised Tech gets as many calls as they do. I really am. It seems like a lot of that stuff could, if they just wanted to not call it one game, they could just almost decide, you know what, if we're going to call a charge, it's going to be pretty obvious, and sorry about you, but so, clean yourself up, Benson, and get back in the game.
So this is the video of the Jara-Weber interaction.
Okay.
So if you hit play, you'll see Weber's talking to Jara. You missed the play, bro.
Of course I did. I'm terrible at phones.
Jara's chirping back at him. Weber doesn't, like right here, if you look at him. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, then you messed it up. You closed the window.
I wrecked it.
Don't touch the things.
This is the worst.
This is really good pod.
Great podcasting. Okay.
Great podcasting.
So he's screaming back at Weber. Weber looks down, picks up a stool, spikes it into the court.
Hey, come on, Bruce. That's our court.
It's our court, right?
United's going to be very upset about this.
But no, that's not what he was reprimanded for.
The foul discrepancy wasn't crazy. I mean, it was in Tex. Actually, it wasn't. Yeah, no, it was. Sorry. It was in Tex's favor. Kansas State was called for 21 fouls. Tech was called for 16. So that, but you know, five foul discrepancy, that's not crazy. But he has a point. I can see him having that point. And then, of course, I can see the Big 12. Oh, yeah, we can't let anybody say anything against the officiating of the the integrity of the league.
Whatever his name is that runs the Bowlesby? Yes.
Sounds sure.
Because I keep thinking back to Luck, who was before Bowlesby.
I keep thinking of BB. That's how far.
Oh, my gosh. BB was such a joke.
That's how far out of it I am.
The statement from Bowlesby says, you know, it's the same statement we got when we saw that Kirby Hocutt was fined and reprimanded, although he had a fine because he made very specific claims about mistakes being made.
Sure.
Whereas Weber was like, we need to fix this.
Or just figure out what it... Do we need to have figured a seminar? Figured out.
But it was the same language. It's like, you know, we're issuing a public reprimand for Bruce Weber. There are channels to address this. You broke the league's sportsmanship policy or whatever. It's real stupid.
You broke the league.
All right. Anyways.
You broke my boy.
You win Wednesday night versus the Wildcats. Move on to a road trip, a dangerous road trip, I think, into Ames. Although Iowa State was without their best player, Tyrese Halliburton. And you drop 87 points in regulation, which is not like, you don't usually score more than 75. You scored 51 in the first half, which is a lot.
Solid.
Only 36 in the second half, only. But Jamias Ramsey went off for 25 points. Edwards had 19. Holyfield had 10. Moretti had 9. Like, everybody was really efficient. The team in the first half shot 72% from the field, cooled off to only 45% from the field in the second half.
Well, shoot, Ramsey was, he finished 11 for 22. He was 50%. Edwards finished 7 for 10. He was 70% from the field on the night.
Mm-hmm. And he was 50% from the 3-point line. Ramsey was 40%. Savrasov hit a 3, a big arcing rainbow of a shot. It was beautiful.
Yeah, he does. He's growing on me. He's growing on me. Let the man shoot some threes. I'm okay with it.
TJ Shannon jacked up a 3. He missed. Holyfield missed his only 3 attempt. But Holyfield was 3 of 4. Moretti was 3 of 6. Shannon was 3 of 6. Savrasov was 2 of 2. Like I said, 45% from only 45% in the second half. For the game, Texas Tech shot 57% from the field. The one for eight from 3 in the second half really broke your 3-point percentage here when you only shoot 12%. But the first half you shot 63%. So that dropped you down. You were 6 of 16 for the game, so 37%. And then you were nearly 90% from the free throw line.
Yeah, I mean, and Tech had 10 steals. They were all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They were picking pockets all night.
6 blocks.
Yeah, it was a very efficient game, and that's not to jump ahead, but I'm kind of ready to get this, rip this Band-Aid off, but that's what was so disappointing about tonight. To see Tech dismantle Iowa State in front of a raucous home crowd by 30 and then just kind of lay an egg.
In an empty neutral site arena.
Yeah, four hours from home. So, I, you know, seeing them lose tonight against OU at Chesapeake Arena, 51 to 65, I mean, Tech never felt in it. They got down early. And that was it. I mean, I think they pulled within 10.
I think it was 8 at one point in the second half, like, yeah, 5 or 6 minutes to go. And you pointed out to me. Yeah. I was like,
I think you're sharing some baseball insight, and I was pointing to the score like, oh, hey, hey. And then, no, yeah, that never turned out.
And then I finished my point. Look, oh, we're down by 16. Which I don't know if that says more about me talking for so long or just how quickly that.
Well, here's what I thought. I was concerned with, I thought, man, every time I look over here, OU's shooting free throws. You know, what the heck is going on? OU only shot 10 free throws all night. I think
you just saw all of them.
I think I saw all of them, and they were at least eight of them were in the second half in the last 5 minutes. Second half, got my West Texas coming out, but yeah, that was a really tough watch. I mean, no one really played well. McCullough was 6 for 17. Dude shot 17 times. He was 1 for 8 at one point, I think. Our guy Ramsey, 0 for 8. He had 0 points on the night. 0 for 3 from 3 point.
And those weren't all 3 point shots. Like, he had layups he missed.
There were several layups.
Bunnies.
McCullough, he got a few points towards the end of the game to end with 13 total as a high point. But your second high point was Clark off the bench with 11.
Who didn't play on Saturday for whatever reason.
That's right. We didn't mention that, but he was...
The coach's decision.
He was benched for the entire game. And
healthy scratch.
Yeah. I'm not sure... I just would love to know why, but I'm sure we'll never know why. We will never know why.
We'll never know.
I just would love to know.
Yeah, so after tonight, you are now... Texas Tech is 16 and 10 or 19 and 10. I can't remember where we're at in the season.
I can tell you real quick. 18 and 10.
18 and 10. 9 and 6.
Yes.
In Big 12. You're still... squarely in third place. You have been eliminated from defending your Big 12 championship title, although Baylor did lose this weekend, but they are just tied for first now with Kansas. Texas has moved up into fourth place, but you have another shot at them at home in Lubbock.
On Saturday.
Saturday. And then you get... Kansas at home and Baylor on the road.
Not in that order, but yes.
Sure. So you, that streak that we were all kind of hoping for, this run that Tech could have gone on, I think you sprinkled in 3 losses. And we're like, yeah, Tech could win eight in a row until we get to Baylor or Kansas or whatever comes first.
3 bad losses, too.
Yeah, you got this one.
Oklahoma State
and Stillwater, which was like, that was frustrating to watch.
All
the losses are frustrating. Let's be honest.
Of course they are.
Anyways, there are.
They weren't really. There was just two.
But they were so bad. They were.
Yeah, they counted. They felt like more than that.
Which is funny because like the really big wins we had, like versus TCU, where you beat them by 46, don't make up for the losses.
No, not at all.
Although. Looking at that, this is a stat that was kind of thrown out there on the Twitter. Over the past 2 seasons, Texas Tech has given a team either their worst loss at home ever or their worst Big 12 loss ever.
Do tell.
West Virginia and Kansas in 2019, those were 26 and 29 points respectively. And then Oklahoma State was a 35-point loss this season. TCU was 46. Iowa State was 30. You've done that in the past 2 seasons where you've put up career high or lows, depending on which side of the game you're
yeah,
on.
Yeah, that's true.
Results.
Good night. Keep it up.
Including a game against Kansas. You beat them by 29 last year.
It was so glorious watching that game.
So much fun. Very much like when you beat TCU by 46. Although you just,
it didn't feel as
same
strong.
Kind of offensive flow. You just didn't have the opponent.
Right, right.
And then Iowa State by 30 this past weekend, which is their worst loss in their home court ever. It used to be versus Kansas in 2003, which 29 points. You beat that. They lost to Kansas by 26 this season. Obviously you beat that.
That's what's so frustrating about this team, and I know everyone thinks the same thing and has probably said it, that just to see those
so
kinds of games.
Inconsistent.
Yeah, and then be on the almost complete opposite side of it, to lose by 14 to...
To not even, like, the best team in the conference. Like, it would almost be understandable and more acceptable if you beat a team like Iowa State by 30 and then come back to play a Baylor or a Kansas in a halfway neutral site and then lose in the way you did tonight.
Yeah. Or West Virginia, you know.
But no, it's Oklahoma.
Yeah. Who's
probably until tonight on the bubble. They had lost three games going into this. I think they were, they may be a 12 seed, depending on how they ran out, the season. I think their net ranking is in the 50s, whereas yours was like 15. Not a good loss. Like, this is going to hurt your resume, which is, I think a lot of people are, there was this one guy who's a self-proclaimed bracketologist that got involved with some Tech fans this week that was talking about how he just didn't see why everybody was overvaluing Tech. And he's probably going to point to this game and like re-fire up all these arguments and start.
Well, especially right after Tech jumped back into the rankings again at 22. You know, they fell out last week after losing in Stillwater. And then now they're back in. It's just, it seems, because they got right back in it before they went to Stillwater. I don't know. Dan's theory is that they play better when they're not ranked, and I think he's right.
That also comes, like, you also like come back into the rankings before a road game.
That's true. But anyway, then you beat the snot out of somebody at the Hilton.
Yeah, like,
it's one of the toughest places to play in the whole league.
You won there last year, but you also won it like,
you didn't win by 30.
No, and you also had much higher stakes. You were playing for a conference championship that day.
Right. And it was senior night.
It was senior night for Iowa. They were booing you.
Yeah, because you were still on the court celebrating while they were supposed to do. Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. So looking at this is something else that I saw, and I can't remember. I think it's a Kansas State fan that compiles this. He does a lot of stat tracking too. Looking at the current Big 12 coaches, Big 12 records by win percentage. Number one is not really a surprise, Bill Self, at nearly 82%. Number two, though, if you hadn't seen this list, who would you have guessed?
Because
I probably would have gone with
Huggins.
Huggins or Weber.
Yeah.
But it's Chris Beard at almost 59%. Huggins is at third at 55. Weber is the only other Big 12 coach with a winning career Big 12 record at just under 51%.
So that's just barely.
Lon Kruger, 49%. Scott Drew, I think, is a surprise, especially after this season, because this season stats are helping this number.
Big time.
At 48%. Prom, whatever his name is, 45%. Everybody's favorite Longhorn, Shaka Smart, 42%. Jamie Dixon, just under 42%. And then surprisingly not on the hot seat, Boynton at Oklahoma State at 34%.
I think they just really like him. Or they just believe in
him.
Or they're waiting for that big recruit to come next year.
Is like he has like a really bad season until like last couple weeks, and he wins enough games like, oh, there's momentum. Like we're making progress.
Yeah.
And then
next year.
Like 2019, like they were like 0-11 to start the season.
Basically the Kingsbury method.
It was almost the exact same start that they had this season. They started with a really terrible losing streak, and now they've put enough wins together, like, Mike Boynton's not that bad, and he's got the number one recruit in the country coming in next year. We're fine. Shaka Smart, though, I think is funny at number eight. Just the arrogance of the Longhorns paying what they're paying him to have the eighth best coach in the conference.
Well, with the amount of money they just funnel into that program too.
And I'm sure they look up at Beard and like, we got him. Like, no, you don't.
Yeah, I'm just spouting off here, but there was some article, I think it was in either the Austin American Statement or something like that, where it's basically said, guys, y'all just need to give up on it. Beard's not coming. Even if he did, we'd have to pay like $30 million to get him, and then we'd have to pay Smart off too, and then it would just be like, no.
And then you would pay a salary to a program that this past weekend, minutes before tip-off, looked like there was like a dozen people in the arena on a Saturday afternoon basketball game.
Yeah.
like they were like, look, here's a student section. And it was nothing but like the t-shirts that had draped over the for all the students that were coming that didn't show up.
Well, they just knew they wanted to see what the score was at halftime before they waddled over there. Check it out.
Yeah. All right. One other stat before we move on to your questions. This was compiled by a Twitter handle, Bullies of Broadway. He's a Texas Tech fan. There's some really great statistical analysis. It's a great follow. He looks at the Big 12 in its current alignment, so starting back in 2013, and says in the first 45 series, so basketball series where you play, you know, each team twice in a year, the first 45 of those Big 12 series, Tech has only swept a team in a season four times. Three of them were against TCU. And in that same span, Tech had been on the opposite end, had been swept by a team 22 of those series.
Yeah.
Now, the last 23 series, which it may be like picking the past two years, Tech hasn't been swept and has 11 sweeps of their own.
That's a good turnaround.
It's quite the turnaround. All right, and then we've already kind of discussed our upcoming games, but you've got Texas on Saturday, and then
you've got Baylor on Monday in Waco.
That's right.
8 p.m. on ESPN. That's the big Monday game, I guess, right?
Yes, but Baylor is beatable. Their 23-game win streak was snapped
because they lost one game to Kansas.
And it was like a 3-point
game. They are technically beatable. You are correct. And then, of course, after that will be the following Saturday here in Lubbock versus number one Kansas at 1 p.m. on ESPN. We'll see how that goes. We've got a rough little stretch here, guys. I mean, I think I will actually be at the game Saturday at 11 against UT. I'm really looking forward to it and hope they come out firing. I think they will.
That UT game last season, one was the it was senior night, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, and it could be senior night. Well, no, I guess it would be against Kansas this time. But anyway, it's I only pick two or three games to go to each year just because of childcare and figuring all that stuff out, because we both like to go, and our 3-year-old doesn't quite get it yet. So someday,
why not, Michael?
Someday we'll get her to the point. I think she will really like it, though. But this was the one that I picked, too, for our last one. And it's on Leap Day, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it only comes down every
four
few years.
There you go.
All right, let's get to your questions.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? What's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
We can't handle the truth. I don't think we have any questions, Spencer. Do you have any questions for me? You want to ask me how my day was?
I really should have checked Twitter before I hit that bumper. I'm so sorry.
I was trying to kind of wave you off.
Nope.
Well, I think everyone was just so dumbstruck from the 14-point loss in Norman.
They're probably like, you know what?
For Oklahoma City.
It's a late game. We crapped the bed. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, I'm going to sleep too. I'm tired. So yeah, no questions, guys. What the heck? We're over here. We're sweating. Just slaving away, giving you all this free podcast. I'm just kidding. I'm not that guy. Anyway, we did try to get some questions, but I don't think anybody came in. So on to what we learned, which is going to be just as riveting because I haven't thought of anything yet.
You know what I have learned, though, Michael?
What?
Is that games can be 10 times as exciting.
Oh.
If you put a little money on it.
Good point. Yeah.
If you join MyBookie today, you have to visit mybookie.ag. They will double your first deposit up to $1,000. I'm looking at you for remembrance.
Oh, okay.
Here.
Yeah.
Just because of how much fun we have.
No, yeah.
Watching games like tonight, how much better would that have been, Michael, if there was a little bit of cashaline?
It's funny you mentioned because in our Slack chat, Kyle mentioned that the line had moved from Tech favored at -4.5 to Tech favored at -1.5. And he said, you know, well, that just shows that Vegas sees the money coming in. They're like, okay.
Vegas knows.
Yeah, they know. So I said, oh my gosh, I'd bet all y'all's money on Tech at -1.5. And if I'd have done that,
we still would have lost.
If I would have done that and really wanted to support my team this season, I would have gone to mybookie.ag. I would have bet all y'all's money, and I would have been able to double my first deposit. That's right.
That's right.
You can use promo code CHAIR to activate this offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. So if I borrowed all of the money from y'all's checking account and deposited it into MyBookie, they would double it. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
You know what I learned, Michael?
What did you learn?
Besides playing with MyBookie and doubling your cash, is that it's so strange. My fandom is like, I love Texas Tech and I love Texas Tech basketball, but like baseball season,
you're
started.
Mildly obsessed over baseball.
Baseball is here, and like, I'm not as concerned with baseball, or sorry, with basketball, because I see it as like, well, I don't see us having the postseason success we had last year, but we've got like a top five baseball. I'm gonna go watch them, and that realization that like, one, baseball was the sport I played the longest growing up, mm-hmm. but also that like, I'm kind of a fair weather fan. It's like, let's go watch the baseball team because they're not losing by 15.
Because they're good. I mean,
yes, that they lost to Tennessee. On Friday night, and that's...
Oh, sure, yeah.
That's going to happen. You're going to lose games.
Teams are going to lose.
I mean, very few teams go like 50-3 in a season. Vanderbilt and Louisville and...
I think it would almost be more possible if you weren't playing series. Because people can kind of crack the code. They can kind of figure it out in a series. But even so, it's still a completely different kind of game. Yeah, I can just tell... There's a gleam in your eye when it comes time to talk baseball, and I just kind of sit back and watch you go for it.
I love it, man. I love baseball. I love basketball. I love football. But like I said, baseball was my first and longest sport. I'm excited baseball's here.
I'm happy for you, bro.
You happy for me? Also, I guess the other thing that I can mention that I learned... expectations for barbecue, probably a little too high.
That's an issue.
We both went to a barbecue place this week. This past week.
Okay, that may be what I learned. Perfect. Keep going.
And to be fair, like the weather the previous night, so the day that the food was cooked, may have had more to do with our experiences than anything else. But like, I went to a pretty popular barbecue restaurant on Friday for lunch, or whenever that was, and was like, this was pretty bland. Like I had some burnt ends, I had some ribs, and I had some sausage. The sausage had the most flavor and it was good, but like the burnt ends and the ribs were like, this is barbecue texture, but like there's no flavor here. And then I tried to put with like their sauce they had on the table. I tried that. I was like, did not help.
The weird thing, the place I went, which is a kind of a little mom and pop place. They're still out of a trailer and they're only open a couple of days a week,
which is interesting how that like that,
Thursday and Saturday, I think,
which is strange.
But yeah, they, like you said, I went Thursday for lunch and
So it was Thursday.
They cooked Wednesday night. There was a cold front that blew in. It was in the 30s.
Like it is today.
It was in the 30s with the wind blowing during lunch on Thursday.
Don't go to barbecue for lunch tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe Wednesday. Maybe they're going to have trouble. But that said, I thought they did fine with the brisket, but my favorite part was their, it's never good when your favorite part is the side. Like the potato salad was my favorite part, which was really delicious. Like kind of a baked potato salad.
And I kind of had like the opposite reaction to side, because I tried something new at this place for a side, and it was a baked potato casserole.
Yeah.
And I was expecting more of like a baked potato salad. And like the difference in temperature expectation, because I was expecting cold, even though it was a casserole and it came warm.
Yeah.
Threw me off. It was like, imagine just eating like a warm potato salad.
I did. Here's what I really did learn too. I'm kind of changing subjects, but not really.
That's fine.
I learned to be very careful when flipping sausages on a charcoal grill. I had some of that Kaneka sausage,
mm-hmm.
the Cajun flavor. Had some friends over on Saturday. Nope. Yes, it was Saturday. Did some sausages and some dogs. And I'd pulled the dogs off, which is luckily, because I think dinner might have been ruined because I wouldn't have been able to get them off in time. And I had the sausages on the side. I had the charcoal in the middle and the sausages on the side just kind of heating up. And I thought, you know, I'm going to throw them over the coals just briefly to, you know, kind of char them a little bit because I didn't want to break the skin. I barely touch one of them. And my tongs break the skin as I'm flipping it over on top of the coals. And the grease immediately starts dripping out. I'm like, oh, now that's
going to be a fire.
I can't believe it. Yeah, I can't believe I popped it. Oh, man, that's annoying. And the fire just kept getting bigger and bigger. And it was taller than me. And I was like putting the lid on. And one of my friends was over here. And we were both just kind of like trying to act like everything's cool.
It's fine.
Then I was like, okay, well, luckily all the hot dogs were off. So no one was going to go hungry. And I thought, I put the lid on. I could still see flames like kicking up out of the little
vent.
I thought, oh gosh. Okay. I just got to pull these off. And so I opened it up and I'm surprised my eyebrows are still here. And I just casually as I could with my friend watching me, like, oh yeah, I guess I'll just pull these off.
That's a much better story than bad barbecue.
But it was one of those things. And they were still very edible. Everything was fine. But
the house is still here.
Yeah, the house is still here. But if those hot dogs had still been on there, because we had like, it was a Costco package. So there were 12 hot dogs. And I had them all on there. Because they had kids over and stuff too. So there were like 7 or 8 of us with kids total. And if I hadn't have pulled those off, those hot dogs would have been ruined. They would have just been black as night.
Yeah, it would have burned up real quick.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I learned. Careful with grease.
Careful with
grease fires.
That's bad news, man. All right. For Michael, I'm Spencer. That'll do it for us on this week of the 23 Personnel Podcast. Check the basketball games out on Saturday. Baseball series this weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast and sharing our fandom for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. You can connect with us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Puntsuck, and Michael at Michael_LBK. And find even more great content over on stakingtheplains.com. Help us out by rating the show and leaving a review on iTunes and subscribe on whatever channel you listen to podcasts. Remember to tell your friends about the show. The guys will be back next week with another episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.